Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. This is the whiskey portion of the show. So if you're watching us on YouTube or listening, we'll talk whiskey. And we have a really cool whiskey experience today. My friend and co-host over here scored something pretty different. It's your story, man. What do you got?
Yeah, so I reached out to the guys at Port Askig. And hopefully I'm saying that right, because we did all our communique via Twitter, which is amazing. This Port Askig is, and it's A-S-K-A-I-G. Okay. It is, this first one is an 8-year Islay single malt. And so what happened was, on our Twitter, we follow and were followed by a number of different whiskey distilleries, bars, pretty much anything to do with whiskey, because our name is Whiskey Congress.
Right.
And we talk whiskey. We put a lot of content out that's about whiskey. So it makes sense that we would, you know, kind of cross paths with various whiskey makers, distillers, and so on and so forth. So we follow the guys at Port Askig, and I saw them put something out about something new. And I said, I want to try it. It looks interesting based off of what they put out there. And they actually got in touch with, we got kind of, you know, we did some back and forth in the direct messages in the DM area. No nudes were exchanged.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Right. No nudes were exchanged, not this time. Yep. And they reached out and said, hey, we'll send you a couple samples. You know, give it a taste, give it a try, and let us know what you think. And so I was really excited. They followed through, send it over. I don't think we can get the, we can't buy this in Ohio.
Okay.
I did send them some information about the stores, and it doesn't seem like we can get it right now. I think it's a Scotch, but they, it's a Scotch, you know, it's a Scotch, but I think that, if you go to the California area, if you're in like the San Francisco, the Bay Area, I believe you may be able to get it there.
Okay.
So, but you know, if you want to go first.
Well, so we tried the first one. I thought it was, what's the ABV on it?
So it's 45.8%.
Okay. I like it a lot. It's kind of like, I would say kind of like a lowland Scotch kind of vibe to it. I don't know where they are, so if I get that wrong, I apologize. But it doesn't have that really smoky Islay thing. So it's more like a Highland or lowland Scotch. But it's got a lot of good flavor. It's got a real good, it's got a burn in a good way. Like it's got that mouthfeel, like you feel like you're drinking a really solid whiskey. I gave it a 90.
Okay. So looking at it, first of all, I'm holding it up there. It is almost crystal clear.
Yeah, it's very light colored.
It actually looks to me, it kind of resembles like a white wine, like a Chardonnay, you know, even lighter.
Yeah, all
right. It's super light, super clear. Now, you know, some of your whiskeys, sometimes they add, you know, colorings and additives to make them a little bit darker. And then others, that, you know, like some of that coloring comes just from the wood and the aging process. But obviously this has no coloring added to it whatsoever. So I just thought that's something that's interesting and unique about it. In terms of the flavor, so it is an Islay Scotch.
Oh, it is really?
Right? Okay. It is an Islay Scotch. And then I actually do pick up on some hints of smoke. I do pick up on, you know, some peatiness, but it's not heavy. It's not overwhelming at all, to the point where you didn't pick it up at all, right? And I think what they were going for doesn't overpower you with peat, with smoke, but it does have that Islay feel to it, which is maybe where you go the Highland region.
Yeah.
Now, some of the, like, now the other thing I will say is that I'm not picking up a lot of other flavor notes, right? Like there's
right, it's pretty,
you know, I mean, it's kind of straight to the point. You know, there's something, there's a, So there's a hint of citrus in there, a little bit. But overall, I mean, overall, it is good. I mean, it's definitely a drinkable scotch, especially with the cigar at night. And so, I rated it at a 91. It comes through with the strong ABV. The flavor is good. It's not overwhelming. It doesn't burn. You know, you said it's a good burn. I don't really. It's warm on the way down.
Maybe that's a better word.
But it's not one of those where, you know, you kind of step back and you're like, oh, that's putting hair on your chest. You know,
no, I mean, no, they call it mouthfeel is the word. Right. They use. I mean, it's got that warm. I agree. It's warm. It's warm, not burning. It's
right.
It's,
I mean, it's coming in over a 90 proof.
True.
And it's not overwhelming. I do think, and the more the flavor kind of lingers in my mouth, the more the smoke and the peatiness kind of comes through. So I think you just have a straight up traditional Islay scotch. I don't think they tried to get too fancy with other flavor notes. It's got a good strength, so I rate it at a 91. So the Port Askeg 8-year Islay single malt.
That's another thing to consider. It's an 8-year that's that smooth.
Well, exactly. I mean, exactly. It's 8 years. So, you have to wonder what
their older whiskeys will be like.
They're 12, if they do a 15, 21, things like 18.
And that probably contributes to the color as well, right?
I mean, maybe, yeah. But actually, that's probably a good call.
All right, the other one.
All right, so then Port Askeg sent us, I was curious about the 8 years, so they sent us the, this one is the Port Askeg 110 proof Islay. It doesn't have an age statement on it. But it is stronger, right? I mean, it's 55%. It's 110 proof. This is one that you will notice. This is one you have a couple sips, and when you stand up, you'll take notice pretty quick.
I would say the first one was one that's the kind of scotch I could drink all night long. It's just sort of the thing that, it's smooth enough. It's got a good flavor. It's got a good, like you said, warmth to it. I cannot believe what we're drinking right now is 110 proof.
Exactly.
It is.
It's unbelievable, right?
It is. There is less. I mean,
right. So,
less.
So it's 110 proof. It doesn't have an age statement. So I'm thinking that it's a blend, maybe. Right.
Okay.
I'm thinking it's a blend of some of their older offerings, right? I mean, because this is remarkably smooth for something that's 110 proof.
Unbelievably smooth,
right?
For that.
Now, this one, like, where content. The other one, I knew right off the bat, that's an Islay scotch. Like, I tasted it. I could taste the smoke. I could taste the peat. This one, there's a little less smokiness to it, right? I mean, compared to the 8-year. And it's just as smooth, but you can still tell it's an Islay scotch, right? It's just got that hint of the
ocean.
Region in it.
Of ocean.
Right, and it's a little salty. And I think overall it's, I mean, for that sort of proof, I mean,
I'm going to the Steve mode. I'm giving it a 92.
I gave it a 93. I mean,
I think I kicked it up a notch because of, I can't believe that's 110.
It's
is that
so
110
smooth.
Proof?
It's 55%, 110 proof.
That's
right
I'm
on the label.
The math is, well, sorry, I wasn't looking at the label.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, thank you.
The guys from Port Askeg.
Appreciate it. Just enjoy your product. Get it to Ohio as soon as you can, please.
Right. But overall, it's, I mean, just a solid. Both are solid offerings.
Yes.
I mean, either one of those I would put in my liquor cabinet and offer those to people as something to taste. If they were looking for a whiskey that tasted different that they hadn't had, that's different from the Ardbegs and the Laphroaigs and some of the more popular names out there. I definitely think that this is something that could.
Any idea on price point what the bottle would go for? Because it's not available here, so
I don't, right? And I couldn't. I had my fingers crossed that maybe we'd get a big bottle, but I mean, there's rules and stuff
like that.
But all in all, it's very good. So if I can get my hands on, on a big bottle, I definitely will. And we'll throw it on Instagram. But we'll throw the sample bottles up on Instagram for people to see. That'll be on our Instagram and Twitter feed. Check that out if you're on the West Coast or where they can go to their website, check it out. You can find them on Twitter at Port Askeg, and I don't have my Twitter right in front of me. It's not on my iPad. Oops. You can go to our Twitter, and I'll definitely link to them afterwards.
All right.
And this video will be up, and I'll make sure I have all their social media info if you want to reach out to them.
All right. So
we thank those guys. For that, this video is going up independent of the rest of the podcast, and it'll probably actually go up tonight Okay. And then the rest of the podcast will be available, you know, tomorrow. Sunday night, Monday. So thanks for checking it out. Check these guys out. Port Askaig, ASKAIG. They're 8-year and they're 110 proof. They both score over the 90s for us. Thanks for checking us out, and we will see you soon.
All right. Okay, so that was the whiskey portion of the show, which was fun. Again, thanks for scoring that.
Yeah.
You had an interesting week on Twitter, my friend.
First of all, I had an interesting week just all the way around.
All right.
I mean, like, I had, you know, friends that were moving from Charlotte to Cleveland. They wanted to rent a house because, you know, they had never lived in Cleveland before. The house that they rented flooded, and so they immediately had to move out because they've got little kids. And so I'm like, all right, just stay with me, eat, you know, like, stay with us. And it ended up being a whole big thing. They're getting it all situated today. It's a long week. So then,
okay,
you know, you got these things going back and forth on Twitter. You know, there was the thing with Orrin Hatch.
That cracked me up.
Well, because I don't like Orrin Hatch.
I'm shocked that you don't like
him. Well, I mean,
I don't like him either. He's a douchebag.
Well, he sticks his nose in some... He sticks his nose in some things.
I don't think you can edit that out, but okay.
Kind of that irk me a little bit. He's a real big guy on... He's big on the supplement industry, and like he attacks the supplement industry all the time. And, you know, now...
That's weird, because there's a big supplement company in Utah.
Right, and I have a feeling that has something to do with it, right? Chances are, whatever that supplement company
isn't giving him money.
Right, well, they probably are giving him money, right? And so, like, the things and people that he's attacking are their competitors.
Okay.
Right, which is, like, and I didn't realize that about the supplement company, but it actually makes sense.
I only know it because I have a friend who worked for them, and he was always flying to Salt Lake City to do shit for them, so.
Okay. And what do you know? Company?
It was a subsidiary of Abbott at the time. I now believe that was 110 proof. I can't say subsidiary, but so it was a subsidiary of Abbott at the time. It may still be. It may have changed.
But anyway, so like I'm just not a big fan of his because he's one of those guys that wants to ban multivitamins and all that other shit. Like, he's just ridiculous. So I'm not a big fan of his. Obviously, you know, like working in fitness the way that I do. And so he put something out about the Supreme Court basically saying that, hey, we're going to, you know, we got to make sure that we can't let people obstruct and we got to get this person through and we got to make sure that they get confirmed no matter what. Right. But this is before Trump made his he made his announcement on who his nominee was going to be.
Basically, Kennedy said, I'm retiring. And he came in and said, we're going to get this guy through.
Right. And it's just like, who? Who are you getting through? You don't know who it is. Trump doesn't know who it is yet. And so basically what you're saying is that you're going to confirm anyone that Trump nominates, right? I mean, that's literally what he's saying. He's like, whoever Trump nominates, we're going to confirm.
Which is dereliction of duty, if you want to get really...
And so my whole point to Orrin Hatch wasn't that... My whole point to him on Twitter was it needs to be based on merit. You need to look... Whoever is nominated... You know, we need to look at the cases that they've adjudicated. We need to look at, you know, anything that they've written in terms of law reviews, you know, legal journals, things like that. We need to just see where this person comes out. Now, you have, you know, the Republicans have control of everything.
House and Senate.
Senate, everything. White House. So, I mean, okay, fine. I mean, you're conservative, but... Whoever it is, you need to fully vet them.
The perfect example was under the Bush administration nominating Harriet Myers, who was clearly unqualified. They would have said, we're going to nominate whoever and shoved her through, it would have been disrespectful
it would have been
to
a disaster.
The Supreme
Court. Yeah. I personally think it would have been a disaster. But aside from that, though, I mean, even like, all right, take Justice Breyer, right? Justice Breyer was touted as he was assumed to be. Like, he was supposed to be a very conservative, the conservative of the conservatives, right?
Okay.
And, you know, come to find out that he's not nearly as conservative as he touted himself to be, right? I mean, like, on a lot of decisions, he sided in ways that you would not think a conservative would vote on a number of different cases. So, you know, there's a lot of conservatives who are still pissed about the Breyer pick because they felt that they were fooled and that they were duped. And I think that if you're a conservative, the idea that you say, all right, whoever he nominates, we're going to push through, your cautionary tale would be just as bright, you know, Stephen Breyer, right?
And I mean, not to to focus on Trump specifically, but especially when it's a guy who is as unpredictable as he is, right?
Well, exactly. My thing when it comes to the Supreme Court, when it comes to these legal issues, you know, I take the politics off, I take the personal feelings aside. You know, when you spend the amount of time going through law school and the amount of money that it costs to go through law school, and some of that, at least for me, just the idea of jurisprudence and the purity of it, it means something special to me. So the idea of making, you know, having a voice in who becomes the next Supreme Court justice, that's important. And you set politics aside and you say, is this a good jurist? Is this a person that we can trust with, you know, the one of the most sacred positions in our nation and in our land? And the idea that it's become so partisan, even the way Kennedy has decided to retire. Now, if you look at it, Kennedy is 81, 82 years old. It makes sense that he would retire, right? I mean, it's just like he's in his 80s. Okay, fine. And people are making a big deal like, oh, he's being courted by the administration and it was a plan set in action. Listen, he's not the only one. This is not the first time. This is standard fare for presidents to figure out like, hey, you know, you're getting up there. How close are you? Can, you know, is there any way we can get you to step down early? And so that's not unexpected. And part of the reason why Kennedy was willing to step down is because, you know, they assured him that it was going to be a pick that was in his mold, and they picked Brett Kavanaugh, who was Kennedy's clerk.
Right.
I mean, like, so Brett Kavanaugh, I think, you know, a lot of people are worried about, and we're just kind of just shifting into this whole thing on the Supreme Court, but a lot of people are worried about Brett Kavanaugh and Roe versus Wade. That's a big issue, right? And that's the biggest issue that people on the left are focused on. And I think even on the right as well, like, because the right see this as their opportunity to overturn Roe versus Wade and get abortion abolished. And then other people on the left are saying, well, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, like, this is a threat to abortion. And
the weird thing is that, or is if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it then becomes a state's rights issue, right? So it doesn't ban abortion. It just means every state can form their own laws and a state could ban it. And there's no federal.
It all depends on what that decision looks like, what they say. And here's my thing. I honestly, in my honest opinion, as a person with legal knowledge, but on the outside looking in, right? I mean, kind of like me procrastinating about the NFL. I don't think that Roe versus Wade is actually in danger of anything. I'm looking at it like, so do you know how they decide what cases they're going to take?
Not well enough that I'm going to say it in a recording.
Right, so, I know. So essentially, like, I'll break it down for you. Very essentially. So the court can decide to take certain cases because of important, like, issues like Bush v. Gore, right? The Supreme Court took that case because they felt it was important enough where you wanted the highest court in the land to make a decision, right? So they just decided to take that case. It didn't go through the standard, you know, local court and work its way through the appellate and through all the other courts to get to them, right? But let's say you do go through that process, you know, local, appeal, bam, Supreme Court. Skipping a bunch of things, and this is very informal. Well, what happens is all those that make it to the highest appellate court, then those, if you want to take it to the Supreme Court, you're basically in it into what they call a cert pool, right? And then in that pool, the clerks for the different justices go through and they take a certain number of cases. And they go through the cases, they read the facts, and they write a brief, and they give it to the justice, and the justice looks at it, and he says, all right, he or she, they say, all right, this is something that I'm interested in, so I'll put it before the rest of the people on the court, the rest of the justices on the court, and they basically vote on it, right? Okay. And they make a decision, do we want to take this or don't we? Now, typically, what happens is they'll take cases, I guess, let me say the reasons why they won't. One of the biggest reasons why they won't take cases, why they stay away from things, is when things are overly political. And it, if they feel that it's going to create more chaos, if they feel it's going to hurt the Republic, then they typically tend to stay away from those cases. My personal opinion, right now, our Chief Justice Roberts, he is not rock the boat guy. You know, he is not the type of guy who wants to get involved in something that's highly political, where you've got protesters and all that sort of thing. I firmly believe that I don't think that you have enough people on the Supreme Court right now who want to be in that sort of spotlight, right? You may have Justice Thomas who, you know, Justice Thomas or we'll take Justice Thomas on one side and Justice Ginsburg on the other side, where they both, you know, Ginsburg is wants to, you know, firmly uphold it. Thomas wants to firmly, you know, take it down. But neither of them want to actually do it. Neither of them want the scrutiny, the pressure of what it would do to our country if they actually put it up for debate, right? Like it's a polarizing issue as it is, and I firmly believe that Roberts and the rest of the crew want nothing to do with it, and so I don't think it's going to come up because I don't think they're going to accept it as a case. It's decided law. There's no, like, people aren't happy with it. But at the same time, because it's decided law and it's been decided by the Supreme Court, your appellate courts and everywhere below, they all have consistent rulings, right? Even Brett Kavanaugh said it's a decided case.
So okay, I didn't know he'd said that.
Right. He said it's a decided case. This is law. This is the law of the land. So, I'm not a Supreme Court justice. So I don't have the authority to sit there and tell you whether it should or shouldn't be. Now, he can get there and say, hey, I think we should look at Roe v. Wade, but he's also the lowest ranking member, he'll be the lowest ranking member of the group, and they basically get to say, shut up and go get us coffee. Literally, when you're the lowest ranking member in the Supreme Court, like your job is to like get them coffee, get them water. Like you're basically like you're an errand boy. It's great. And Gorsuch would luck out. Right, he's just like, oh my god, I only had to be an errand boy for like fucking 6 months.
I don't have to go to Starbucks. All right, there's snarkiness there, which I respect, by the way. You don't actually, but anyway,
no, they do. Like Jim, I'm not exaggerating. Like Neil Gorsuch has to go leave the chambers and go get the rest of the justice water and coffee. Like that is his job.
That's fucking hilarious. If you're not fucking with me, that's hilarious.
I am not. Like this is not a joke. I'm not pulling this out of my ass.
So it's basically like you're a rookie in the NFL.
Yes.
You run errands. Carry the pads. Go get the water.
Carry my helmet, bitch. It's great. I love it.
Oh my god.
I think it's phenomenal.
That is something I knew nothing about, and you know I don't want to go down the whole Roe v. Wade path. We'll talk for hours and because we're not done with your week on Twitter. You got into it with your buddy Larry Elder.
Yeah,
and he responded to you.
Well, Larry Elder is he's got a show. He's based out of L.A. He's got a show. He's conservative. He's black. He's what we call a provocateur.
Fair.
He listen, to his credit, he points out a lot of hypocrisies of the progressive left, right, and liberals.
And those exist. I mean, no denying that.
They're real. They exist. There's a lot of them out there that I question all the time. We talk about on this show.
Sure.
And some of it, though, I believe that he takes a little too far. I think it's dangerous. And he'll never see it this way. He'll never admit it. Not publicly, not openly. Maybe with the truth serum sort of deal, he might. But there's some things that I think that the way he phrases them anyway, the way he puts them out there, he uses that sort of, that school of thought that Breitbart uses, right? Where it's not wrong, it's not inaccurate, but they present it in a way to... They frame a narrative in a way that they know it's going to elicit a certain reaction out of group X and group Y. Now, that's basic marketing 101, sure. And sure, fine, whatever. But I think there's just I think that's one of the biggest problems is just kind of creating that because it's not creating positive discourse. It just continues to push the negative energy that exists.
The back and forth, right?
Right, and especially on Twitter, you've got 242 characters or whatever it is. And so it's just short jabs back and forth. And I sometimes it's just, I think it goes a little too far in the realm of negativity. So then he wrote some article, and he it was published somewhere, and then he tweeted the link, and so I read it, and the whole thing was talking about how there were, you know, multiple, you know, slavery was everywhere, right? Asians and Europeans and Africans sold to African people and
right.
to Europeans and slavery. So, you know, why are black people talking about reparations? Because everybody was slaves. So, you know, like they're making a big deal about it. Just kind of like the whole get over slavery argument.
Right. right.
Just get over it. It's not a big deal. Everybody was slaves. Slavery was everywhere. African sold black.
It was a long time ago.
Right. Like, you're not getting reparations. So it's just, it's over and everybody should overcome and pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That standard argument. My reply is that's true. And there's a book called The Destruction of Black Civilization. That goes into great detail about this, how there were, the Europeans came, but before the Europeans, you had the Arabs that came, and then you had the Asians that came after the Arabs, and then the Europeans came, and then, you know, some of the black nations cannibalized each other, and, I mean, just literally just now, just this week, Ethiopia and...
Somalia? Or
no, Ethiopia and...
I don't know, Kenya?
Eritrea
or
whatever. Yeah. All right. They just solved their whole border issue, and that's something that's been going on, you know, for decades and even longer than that.
I work with someone from there.
Right. Like, and so
I still probably said it wrong.
So, you know, so that book, Destruction of the Black Civilization, it's by Chancellor Williams. It gives you a great breakdown of it, of what happened to the African continent and kind of why it's in the state that it's in, right? It's basically been ravaged by everyone, you know, external and internal. And there's a lot of blame to go around now. But what that book does point out is that, you know, the African continent and the African people, while all different, like it was just a magnificent place at one time. We're talking hundreds of years ago, but it's this unbelievable. Like a lot of the things that are accredited to Asian cultures and Arabic cultures and or you know, Middle Eastern cultures and even Europe, they all came from Africa. It's remarkable. And there are people and anthropologists and researchers who dug and went back and had to, like, the amount of research that they do, the reconnaissance that they had to do in Asia, in Europe, and like Europe, they've got museums that are filled with African artifacts and filled with things that they took from Africa because, like, and it's there for a reason, because if it ever got back to Africa, the fear for the longest time is that if Africans knew what we did to them, like, their response back would not be nice. You know, I mean, and so it's amazing and sad and terrible. You know the story of the Sphinx?
Oh. I mean,
okay, so you know how the Sphinx is. So you know how the Sphinx is missing a nose. Right?
Okay, yeah.
Well, Europeans came in, and there was a war, and the Europeans ended up winning that war, and what they did was they blew the nose off the Sphinx because the Sphinx looked too much like an actual African person, and so when they blew the nose off, they said at the very least people won't know that that is a symbol to African people, right? Because a lot of people think that Egyptians are like Charlton Heston and Christian Bale, right? Because those are the people who play Moses, right? I mean, Cleopatra was apparently Liz Taylor, but I mean, the Egyptians at that time when all that shit was going on were darker, much darker. Right, they hadn't been invaded yet by the Arab people, and so like you
But the Romans had. I mean, the Romans and the Egyptians
Romans
had,
tried, and the Romans were conquered were enslaved.
Well,
at that time,
okay. I mean, there was. I know that
doesn't matter.
Mark Antony and Cleopatra had their little thing, and I don't know that history well enough.
Right. I mean, the point is though, like Africa's got a great history, right? It's an amazing history, and so. It's fucked up. Like, a lot of fucked up shit happened, and one of the big things were Africans that did sell other Africans into slavery. My point is that, yes, all that happened. Absolutely. Right? And there were other people. There were other nationalities, ethnicities, or whatever, that were enslaved. But that's all well and good, but we still had slavery here. Right? In the
United
States.
Much more recently than most of those other places.
Much more recently.
Yes.
Right? And it's still having an impact today.
Yes.
His thing is, oh, what? Today?
He said today. Yeah.
What's your proof?
Right. Okay.
What's your proof? Right. And like, first of all, the fact that we're still having this conversation, that's part of the proof. Right. The fact that it was never resolved, the fact that it was something that, you know, this country went to war over 200 years ago. Right.
Less than that. 1861.
1961. 1961. All right. So 150 years ago. So even better. Right. We went to war 150 years ago. The war was over in 1865.
Five, yeah.
And from 1865 until 1960, right? I mean, we had Jim Crow, we had segregation. So think about this. There are people.
World War II, the army wasn't even integrated.
Right. Well, okay, but think about this. You know, in the 60s, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, JFK, JFK's brother were all assassinated. Yes. Right. And you could say for whatever reason, but we know King was assassinated. Race related, right?
That's a safe statement, yes.
Now, the rest of them, you know, Malcolm X was Nation of Islam. I don't know, but you look at who Malcolm X was, but you look at that time frame. That was anywhere from 1960 through 1970. All that shit happened, mm-hmm. right? We're still fighting the Civil Rights Act and all that.
Right.
Brown versus the Board of Education, all that happens, right?
Right.
There are people, my grandmother, Nana, dear sweet Nana, angry Aunt Nana right now at the Indians bullpen, right? She was alive for this.
Yeah.
Not alive. I mean, she was alive and she was an adult. She was a teenager. Yeah, yeah. My dad was born, right? So there are people alive. So think about those pictures that you've seen, right? Where there are people sitting at countertops with angry white kids throwing, you know, floats on them, dumping food on them, people yelling at black people. Some of those people are still alive.
Yes.
Okay. Those people who thought that black people shouldn't be allowed to sit at a counter where they sit at, shouldn't be allowed to work with them, shouldn't be allowed to basically exist in any way near or around or through or with white people. Those white people, some of those Klan members who were terrorizing people at the time are still alive today. Yeah. Right. Well, and they've had children and grandchildren. And a lot of those people didn't say, you know what, we were wrong. Flip the script. Black people are great. A lot of them didn't do that.
I think the best example, not the best, but a great example is one of your favorite historical athletes who passed away a couple years ago, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali represented the United States in the Olympics, won a gold medal, came back home and was not allowed to sit at a diner in Louisville, Kentucky.
Right.
He was already told, hey, he literally could have worn a fucking gold medal representing the U.S. into that and been told, sorry, you can't sit here.
Right.
And no, not could have. That happened.
That happened. So and so it's just like, okay, well, yeah, those people are still alive. And what does that have to do? Listen, those people own businesses. Those people work in banks. Those people work in stores. Those people have stores. And those people are the people who they have kids, they have grandkids, they have families, and they pass that thought process along, right? And you look at our school system, our educational system, how our educational system was formed, and, you know, gentrification, like all of these things, right? I mean, you go through them, and you even our modern industrial prison complex, right?
That's one of the biggest things I want to hit on. That's one of them.
Right. So there's so many indicators, and all of it flows from... Whether you want to say, all right, well, that flows from segregation and Jim Crow. Where the fuck does that flow from? It all flows from slavery.
Yes.
Right? And the idea of white supremacy, right? And I'm not saying that that's an excuse why me as a black person can't succeed. Clearly, I can.
You succeeded.
Right? I mean, like I'm not at the pinnacle, right? I'm not a multi-millionaire. But listen, I'm doing A-okay. I was able to get an education. I worked my ass off. Right? And I continue to work my ass off. I faced some difficulties. Some of it, was it based on race? Yeah, maybe. Right, but you continue to work on it. I'm not saying you use it as an excuse, but you can't ignore it just because it makes other people feel uncomfortable or just because it doesn't fit your narrative. And if we stop ignoring it and we just say, all right, what are the actual problems that stem from this? How can we resolve these issues? Right? Like, I'm not saying that anything that the Democrats and the people on the left, progressive left, say is right, because clearly it's not. There's plenty of democratically run cities that are fucking shit shows.
Detroit, Chicago,
all got their issues, right? I mean, so there's, like, they don't have the answer, right? And I'm not necessarily saying that what the GOP is saying, what the Republicans are saying is wrong. All I'm saying is we can't ignore the fact that there are still things from our past that are creeping up that are having an impact today. And you can't go anecdotal and say, well, these 27 people made it, so it's all good and it's all fine.
So there's a few things I wanted to hit on. I know it's great for the white guy to jump in and talk about this, but there are, you know, people say, when I say systemic racism still exists, and I was once a denier of that, and I've owned that, and I've owned that I was wrong, things that I will point out, well, give me an example. Okay, here's an example. Differences in sentencing policies for crack cocaine versus powdered cocaine. Crack cocaine was vilified by the court system. Like, I think the ratio was 100-1. Like, if you add this amount of powdered cocaine, you got this sentence. And if you had 1/100th of that in crack, you got a much stiffer sentence. And so, let me pretend to be a right-wing, angry white guy for a minute and say, well, if you don't do cocaine, you don't have that problem. That's true. No one's arguing that. But the fact that if you commit the same quote-unquote minor offense and you're using the predominantly white version, you get a slap on the wrist, you're Robert Downey Jr. from the 90s, and if you do the same thing as a kid in downtown Cleveland or wherever, you're going to jail for 5 years. Well, and once you're in jail for 5 years, you're not fucked. You're in a real tough spot.
Right. You're in a bit of a bind. Now, what the conservatives will do, well, look at this person. He was in jail, and now he's... Okay,
yeah, great.
Fine, great.
Whatever.
But here's the thing.
But that's a law that... That a law that was racist by its nature, and I'm not going to call it an accident. I've got a second example, but if you want to chime in.
Just to even simplify it, where do we know weed is predominantly, like, where do you, like, if you needed weed, there's one, you can go one of two directions.
You're asking
to
the
get
squarest
it.
Guy in the world sure. when it comes to that.
And so it's a rhetorical question. I'll answer it for you.
Thank you.
You can either go to the hood,
or go right? to Rocky go, River, where it was
no,
earlier.
No. Weed. Hold on, shut up.
All right,
You either go, in Cleveland, you go to the east side of Cleveland, you can find
hood,
weed
right.
over there. You go to the hood, or college campus.
Okay,
because right? we know there's weed all over college campuses, whether it's Harvard, Yale, Berkeley, Stanford, Alabama, Ole Miss. Wherever.
All right.
You know, pick a college campus, West Virginia, every school that you went to, Ohio State, there was weed.
Yes.
There was someone there who had weed, right? How many arrests for weed are there on college campuses?
I don't know, but it's a much smaller number.
Right.
And it typically, if that happens on a college campus, a campus cop says, I'm taking your weed, and it probably gets resold. But I want to interrupt you, though.
Or used.
I want to interrupt you, because today I was at an event that I don't want to say the name of, but I was...
Well, hold on. But that doesn't complete my point.
All right, sorry.
Right, so you can go to the hood, you can go to college campus to get weed, right? Chances are you're safer going to a college campus. It's less likely that someone's going to get arrested on a college campus for weed, right, at a college party, whatever, than going to the hood. Right, police will use, hey, you have weed on you, as a reason to bust a kid, and then turn around and say, and then all of a sudden that just opens the door to the shitstorm that happens to the kid afterwards, right?
Right.
I mean, so the simple disparity in how it's treated based on locality, right? It's the same. Crack and cocaine, it's the same, but it's different. Weed is weed. Right, whether it's being smoked by a couple of white kids in a dorm room at Cleveland State, or you know, it's some kid walking down East 55th in Cleveland. Either way, it's the same drug, and it's treated completely different. Like the police will literally drive down the street, see that kid walking, and jump out of the car, pull him over, pat him down, pull the weed out of his pocket. Now today, it's a little bit different, right? Because weed is becoming less of a sticking point because it's being legalized, right? Right now, it's medicinally legal here. People are still going to get in trouble for it until we legalize it recreationally and all that other shit. But it's becoming less of a sticking point. Police aren't as worried about it because we have bigger issues to worry about, like opioids and everything else. But even look how opioids are treated, right? Crack, heroin, those are considered, you know, black people drugs in the 80s and the 90s.
They're street drugs, right?
Thus, war on drugs. Opium... Or the opioid epidemic, it's just like, oh my God, it's a healthcare thing. We got to take care of these people. Why? Because it's white kids in the suburb, right? Like, how many times?
It's white adults in the suburbs,
well,
too.
Well, right. It's everywhere.
It's actually in the
right? I mean, it's everywhere.
Too.
I mean, because, but, I mean,
But you kind of touched on something else that is another. When people again say, give me an example of systemic racism, I don't know why that accent came out. Another example is stop and frisk, right? Again, people will say, well, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't got to worry about it. Okay, whatever. Fine. But if there was a policy that allowed you to go to affluent suburbs, just grab a person on the sidewalk and say, I'm going to pat you down and see if you're doing anything, carrying anything illegal.
How about this? Anybody listening to this that's white, think about the police stopping and pulling over your dad while he's mowing his lawn, right? And patting him down, right?
Right.
What would you say? What would your dad say? Right, like, and think about and who
the equivalent
your dad
of that
are.
Is happening in New York City in right? poor I mean, neighborhoods,
or just walking down the street, right? I mean, and they're just like, well, because you know, like, black people are prone to blah 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 statistically, blah blah blah. Right? Okay, fine. But what we know about drug use is it's about the same amongst black people and white people, right?
Right.
Percentage wise, black people and white people use weed, cocaine, whatever it is, around the same amounts. It fluctuates by. You know, plus or minus, you know,
whatever percent,
right? But it's about the same. But yet the arrest rates for black people are much higher. The rates per capita are higher for black people, right? But we know that they use the drugs the same, right? Like, so if you want to look at it, like, so why, right? Like, so, I mean, here's the thing. You want to crack down and be, you know, the red hand of God on crime, fine. Just do it the same way everywhere.
And if you started doing that, weed would be legal throughout the country tomorrow.
Right. Weed would be legal.
I was at this event today, and there were three people that I know of that were smoking from vaporizers with THC in it. I know this because...
What event were you at?
I don't want to say the name. I'll tell you off air.
You don't want to say the name?
I don't want... No, it was an event that I was invited to by friends, and I don't want someone to hear this. And
okay.
It was an event in Rocky River, Ohio... where the population of this event was, let's put it this way, I didn't see anyone there darker than me. Let's leave it at that. And there was no one, again, you're not...
There's a caveat, though, there, because you're Mexican.
I do look very Mexican, yes. All right. Anyway, your interesting week on Twitter. So you want examples of systemic racism in our laws. There's a few of them. There are more.
Listen, and I think... My point was misconstrued, right? I'm not a big reparations guy, right? I'm not just because I don't know what good it would do at this point, right? Unless it were done a certain way. And a lot of people don't know where the whole idea of reparations came from. The idea of reparations didn't come from black people. It wasn't our idea. Well, technically, we were at the table.
Was it
the
Japanese internment thing?
No. Reparations came from General Sherman.
Oh.
General Sherman... At the like, as well, you know, as the war is wrapping up, you know, he issued a field order, and this is where 40 acres and a mule comes from.
Although okay,
it was never originally a mule, although later he did say, you know, black people can have access to mules and donkeys and tools and whatever they need. But General Sherman's order, his field order said that Civil War is over. Union is won, and the freed slaves are granted all the land of the former plantation owners, basically from the islands of South Carolina all the way down the coast of Florida, right? So all that land, that's where all the slaves will go, and each family, essentially, will get 40 acres.
Okay.
And they'll have that 40 acres independently. It's about the size of some of these plantations, which that is fucking massive, right?
Yeah, oh.
And it's a ton of land, and so that is, you know, that's kind of, that is our olive branch. Those are the reparations. This is, like, listen, a few hundred years of slavery, everything.
Sorry about the whole slavery thing.
Here's 40 acres, right? And later he threw in, and you can have mules, tools, whatever
right,
you need
the things to help you do
to,
something with
to
that
cultivate
land.
That yep, land yep. And whatever. Now, what happened was once Lincoln was assassinated. And his predecessor, Andrew Johnson rescinded that. And then they immediately started to re-embrace the South and the Confederates and reintegrating them into the Union and appeasing them and basically saying, right, instead of appeasing the slaves and helping them get integrated into society and allowing them to kind of build their own society, we'll just bring the Confederates back in and let them reintegrate, and then we'll set rules accordingly, and then you get Jim Crow and everything that happened. So you have to wonder if what had originally been kind of put out there, had that been allowed to stay in place, you have to wonder kind of what happens at that point in time, because we've seen, like, we've seen glimpses of when you let black societies alone, right? Like, they were able to do great things, right? In pockets, right? Like, and we talked about Black Wall Street in Oklahoma and what happened there. Do you know, we did talk about that,
I don't think we did.
Black Wall, oh my God, Black History Lesson Day. Sorry, folks.
Oh, yeah, really, this is, it's not even February. Come on.
So, outside of Tulsa in Oklahoma, there was a society that it was all black, right? That's where a lot of freed blacks went, and they lived there and thrived. They had banks. They were doctors and accountants. They had their own hospitals. They had their own society. It was a small city burgeoning on a small county. Then one day, one of the members of that society went into Tulsa. Something with a white woman. He whistled at her, allegedly, supposedly.
Oh, is this...
Not Emmett Till.
Okay.
Not Emmett Till.
Yeah, that wasn't so, Oklahoma. Okay.
And so... this guy goes in and he gets accused of touching a white woman inappropriately, pisses off a bunch of white guys, but the guy is able to make it back to what we'll call Black Wall Street, right? Which is this place outside of Tulsa. So there was a gunfight. That's right. That's what. Like they attacked him. He had a gun on him. He shot back. They shot at him. He blah, blah, blah. So then he makes it back to his hometown, and then everybody in Tulsa is just beside themselves, right? Like, this nigger comes into our town and touches one of our women. We can't let it exist. So they literally bring the whole squad. And I mean the whole squad, everybody, right? This is, I think, the only time in history where a U.S. city was bombed by any form of government locally, like whether local, state, or federal, was bombed by a, you know, U.S. government agency.
Okay. I don't know any of the stories.
So what they did was everybody from Tulsa and outlying counties, like all the white people, came to what is known as Black Wall Street, and they obliterated the city. They killed 50% of the population.
Wow.
Burned the city to the ground, hung people, women, children. It was a massacre.
I do not know any of the stories.
Like, so people were dragged, people were put in jail, and the city was never rebuilt, and it was never allowed to happen again that black people could have anything like that. Anytime black people did try, immediately towns got together and created rules, zoning, and that's where like a lot of your zoning laws come from, is that anytime that you had a group of black people that tried to just kind of isolate themselves, the respective town, they would create these zoning laws that wouldn't allow for that sort of instead of allowing it to be residential, they would zone it commercial and all the other stuff and said, oh, well, you can't build a house here, so you guys can't live here, so you guys disperse.
And then the whole thing with the inner cities and white flight happened in the 60s and 70s, and that, I mean that's later, right, by a lot.
But that's how...
But that kind of leads to where we get to today.
Right.
Yeah, so, all right, so anyway, for those who want to know how slavery still impacts us today, if that didn't get you at least rolling on the path, then that's on you. We've been drinking whiskey, and we figured this out, so...
just Google Black Wall Street.
Yeah, I will. I'm sorry. I can't believe... If we talked about this, it was probably one of our whiskey drinking, cigar smoking nights where I was hammered, and,
yeah,
and I've been known to forget some of those nights, but I do enjoy, you know, I enjoy learning. All right, so there's a few other things I really want to talk about.
Yeah, let's go through them.
All right, so first of all, totally changing gears.
Flip-flopping.
There was a major criminal arrested in Ohio this week, someone who was a threat to our society and the absolutely worthy of the city of Columbus putting on a sting organization. Stormy Daniels was arrested for illegal motorboating. Now, Stormy Daniels, your fondness for porn is something you're not shy about, and cool. Stormy Daniels, if you don't know who she is, you've been living under a rock, and there's no chance you're listening to our show. You certainly didn't survive to this point in our show if you don't know who she is. And you know, so I, 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 messaged you and said, hey, I want to talk about this for its comedic value because it is kind of funny. And you came back with a pretty strong response and said, it's kind of scary.
It's terrifying. It's actually not funny. So let's run through this. So what happened was Stormy Daniels has been touring the country. And this is what a lot of porn stars do this. They tour the country and they go to strip clubs, right?
Right.
It gets marketed out via social media, whatever, locally, the strip clubs here, or Christie's and the Hustle Club. And they'll put it out that we'll have, that they're going to have Stormy Daniels, or they're going to have Christy Mack or Rachel Starr or whoever, right? And then
Kendra Sunderland, my favorite.
Right. And then, wait, who?
Kendra Sunderland?
Oh, okay.
Library Girl?
And so
she's not a porn star. Well, actually, she became one, but anyway, she was a YouTube star.
And so they travel and they go to different strip clubs. And
right.
For a lot of them, they actually make more money doing the strip club circuit than they do actually in porn.
Oh, by a lot, I think.
Right. I mean, it's massive. Like, Christy Mack won't do porn anymore. One, because she had that horrible incident that happened with the
I don't know what
happened. You know what happened. The guy that called the machine or whatever.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry. I do know. Yeah. War Machine. Fuck that guy. He's in jail for 40
years.
He's
dead.
What?
He killed himself.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he killed himself.
Oh, good. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry for being so callous, but that guy's a scumbag.
No, he was a scumbag.
What he did to her was unmuddled. Oh, yes. I know exactly that story.
She was a Midwest girl, and she did hair. And she went out to California to, do hair, and ended up, she was doing hair in the porn industry, and they're like, you're hot. Do porn. She did porn. She ended up hooking up a War Machine. He beat the shit out of her, raped her, nearly killed her, her friend. UFC fighter and all this. It was ridiculous.
Yes.
But anyway, so they do but she won't do porn anymore, not for any other reason. And she, I won't even get into that.
Yeah, let's
she
fast
said,
forward.
Someone asked her to do something, and she said, I would love to, but as much as I love porn, I don't make nearly as much money as I do working the strip club circuit, so I'm just going to keep doing that. So that's why they do it.
All right.
So Stormy Daniels is obviously in money-making mode because she's got to pay legal bills, so she's doing the strip club circuit. She was in Columbus. She does her normal thing. She's really kind of touchy-feely. She was motorboating another
female,
stripper.
Right,
like a fellow employee, and allegedly a male touched her while she's on stage.
Well, that's not what I heard. I heard that a female approached her and said, will you do this?
There
and
were
that female
sorts,
was an
there,
undercover
there,
cop.
There were a number of different things that went
all right.
On. So anyway, so she gets busted, right? She gets arrested for, it's a bullshit charge. And then the
police. Do you know what the law is, by the way?
Yeah, the law. So actually the law is fucking hilarious.
It is.
Right. So the law is if you're working in a gentleman's club and you're a stripper and you touch one of the employees that's not a family
a relative.
Member.
not an employee. If you touch a patron or a patron touches you and you are not relatives,
related, then
it's a crime.
Which is fucking
it
bizarre.
It should be reverse. Like, if they just, are a relative, like, that should be the fucking
why
crime.
Why is the whole relative thing in there? Okay, fine. it's so fucking, it's such a weird, like, oh yes. My God, fucking Ohio. So,
and you can't have a mule on the second floor of a brothel or whatever.
Yeah, so... So that's the law that they busted her on. And then the chief of police or whoever said, oh, well, we've had some issues with sex trafficking and we're trying to crack down on it.
Right?
It's like, so just so we're clear. So you have issues with sex trafficking. You're worried about girls being forced into slave labor, working at strip clubs. So you arrest the girls? Think about
that. Okay, there's that. There's so many things in this.
Right. I mean, it's just like, so my issue with it while... My issue is that this was, you can't tell me that this wasn't directed at her because of who she is, right? And listen, you look at who represents that region,
right?
Jim Jordan, right? Like, that's his area. Jim Jordan is a staunch Republican, of the free, whatever that
Freedom
committee
Caucus
is,
or
the
whatever?
Freedom Caucus. And if you don't think that that wasn't intentional, you know what I mean? Like, because, listen, I've been to plenty of strip clubs. I don't go as frequently as I used to, but I spend enough time in strip clubs to know, in Ohio,
right?
To know.
You are an authority on this matter. I've actually never been to a strip club in Ohio.
Right. And so what they arrested her for is bullshit, and they arrested her for a reason.
Right.
And it's complete bullshit. And to put it under the guise of protecting for human trafficking is horseshit. Because you would not, if you're worried about human trafficking, you don't arrest the girls that you think are being human fucking trafficked.
100% legit. When you and I traded those text messages or whatever, one thing you said that really struck me is you don't put a sting together willy-nilly. That was a planned event.
I can't put a sting together, right? I can't go to the police department and say, all right, boys, gather around. That's what we're going to do. I'm worried about X, Y, Z. Let's get it done, right? You don't do that. That's not how it's done.
It does not happen, right? without planning.
And it takes time, energy, and money. Right, and so this was by design. Now, if you want to tell me that they've made arrests at strip clubs before, I don't doubt that.
Sure.
Right, and I actually went into it, and there were arrests in Columbus in that area at strip clubs, but they weren't arresting girls. Right, they were arresting people that they knew were tied to human trafficking fucking rings. Right, and that's where words matter, people. Like, yes, they were at strip clubs, and yes, they made arrests, but they weren't arresting the girls on stage. They were arresting the people that were taking girls and forcing them on stage to dance, right? So the fact that they lied about what they were doing, and they lied about why they arrested that woman, because that woman didn't do anything out of the ordinary, right? And I don't care how you feel about strip clubs, right? Like, a girl taking her titties and rubbing in your face isn't a fucking crime, right? Like, it's not a crime. It's not a crime. Right? Like, if I'm giving you fucking money and you put your titties in my face, that's not a goddamn crime. Right? And if you think it's a crime, then fuck you. Go be a fucking Amish person.
You know, I'm not a strip club guy, but the last strip club I was in was for a friend's bachelor party. It was in New York. And again, not my thing, but at one point I threw like $5 in singles onto the stage just to, you know, show I wasn't being a stick in the mud. And I was wearing my glasses that night, and the girl working the pole at that moment literally grabbed the back of my head and shoved it between her boobs. And getting cocoa butter off glasses is not easy. You've probably perfected that.
Well, no, I mean, like, now they don't use as much, like, butter more. It was like
brutal.
Kinda...
I had a fade, like, yeah, a glaze over my eyes. I got a cab ride home. It was fine.
That's why you use cotton.
But the big...
Cotton shirts.
See, there we go. That's, you know, advice from Steve when little, it comes to how to...
A little hot breath. A little cotton.
But,
you rub them
off,
the bigger
point, off. The bigger point, and I'm glad you said it, is that when local people start using their authority to punish people that are a problem to their federal level friends, for lack of a better word, and almost every fucking police department backed Trump.
Yep.
That's, I don't want to sound hysterical, so I don't want to use words like Gestapo.
I'm the one, like, you want to just bring it up for comedic value. I'm the one who brought it up, who said, like, this is a problem. And to me, that's fucking scary. I think it's scary.
Because
it's,
if you're not Stormy Daniels with her kind of money, her kind of authority. I mean, if Stormy Daniels was some random stripper at Christie's in Cleveland, she's in jail now, today. Right. 5 days later, if she's a threat to exposing Donald Trump, the fact that Stormy Daniels has Michael Avenatti and that whole thing is why she gets charges dropped. Oops, sorry, our mistake. Not your fucking mistake.
Right.
Don't insult my intelligence.
So that's what makes it even worse, because they dropped the charges right after the fact. And that's just a classic fucking Gestapo intimidation move. Right, they arrest her, they make her go through the thing, they get a mugshot, it makes it all through the news, and then they send a little blurb out like, oh yeah, we dropped the charges.
Right.
Right? Now, Michael Avenatti is going to make it.
But,
now,
she got handcuffed. She got processed. She had criminal charges filed.
So Michael Avenatti, now, you know, this is where this guy kind of irks. Like, I don't mind him. I don't mind him, but he's like, well, I went in there and was able to get the charges.
Okay.
Like, okay,
you're not Mr. Super Bowl lawyer. Okay, right, I'm with you on that.
Like, they were intending to, like, this is all a stunt on this. This is all a stunt from, you know, whether it was the local PD or someone higher.
It trickles up in this case.
Right. I'm pretty sure it goes up, and that's why that shit happened. So, you know, it kind of funny, but not. And there's more issues with that than anyone will actually bring up. And the people who will bring it up are part of the resistance, and they're so crazy and it'll be hard to take them serious. But that's something to legitimately be concerned about.
So, sort of switching gears back towards racism, John Schnatner or whatever the
Papa
fucking
John
Papa
himself.
John himself had to step down from Papa John's. Because it came out that he dropped an N-bomb in a teleconference, and he apologized for it. So it's not speculation.
Well, so this is what happened. he and you told me we had this conversation, right. But there was a conference call, and Shatner, they asked him, "Hey, like, you're really tied to this whole thing. You're tied to the NFL. This whole anthem thing is an issue. You know, you are on record of saying that it, you know, that because these guys are protesting the anthem, it's costing you money. It's not playing well in the media. What are we going to do about it?" His response is, "If Colonel Sanders said nigger and didn't get, you know, lambasted for it, look at the, you know, look at the right. ads. They're still using them today. I'll be fine." Right. And that was the context.
Something
to
that effect. Yep.
And so here's my thing. You got to know time. You got to know place. Me and you have a deal where if we're going to talk about racism, we're going to be adults. We're going to be objective. If you're going to say, if you're going to use the term nigger, you're going to use the term, right? Not directed at me, not as, right. But like if we're talking.
Or at any human. But
we're having the conversation and it comes somebody. Up, we're quoting whatever, then we're going to use it and we're going to put it out there, right? And then we'll have the discussion about the you know, the use of the issue, word right. as such. And, you know, I think he was trying to be direct. Now, I'm not defending him because you got to know where you are. Right, you got to know who you're talking to. You're talking to corporate small. And here's the thing: listen, that level of business where you've made that sort of money, you don't think that there's people out there who want to fuck you? Are you that
That's
fucking
true.
Stupid? Right, like here, this is why I say, good, you lost your job because you're fucking stupid. Right, if you think you could just throw the term nigger out there and you think, well, like because
he was quoting Colonel Sanders,
somebody wasn't. Out there is just like, you know what, we need him out of the mix because that's more money for me. That's right. And I guarantee you that's what. How else did it get out? Do you mean to tell you think that there was really someone who's that socially conscious on that board who gives a shit whether you call a black person a nigger or whatever? Fuck you, no.
I'm right?
Somebody said, "Bye bye, Johnny."
But someone said, "Did he really just do that?"
Right, like somebody said that.
So like I said, we have our rule. But if I'm at work, mm-hmm. if I'm at my job, and I am not nearly as high on the totem pole as that guy is in his job, obviously. And I'm having that same conversation. I'm saying Colonel Sanders used the N-word. And in my brain, I'm like, you're being a pussy. You know, you're being silly. But,
right, but you're not with me.
I'm in a corporate. I'm not with right. you. I'm not on a show where we drink whiskey and talk real stuff and talk about racism and stuff. I'm in a boardroom talking right. about marketing. And I freely just let the word fly? Really?
Right. Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. I mean, I feel nothing for him. The fact that he's got... You know, you and I have actually had this conversation.
Listen,
people say this pizza is shit. It's not great pizza. It is not even good pizza, but no. I don't mind it sometimes.
I don't mind it. I got to be honest.
At business meetings, that garlic butter and the pepperoncinis, I kind of like it.
So we used to get, when I was at UMass, we used to get Papa John's. So we would have a team meal, right, that was always just fucking phenomenal, right? Especially when we were home. Like, they would knock the team meal out of the park. It was great. And then we had a curfew, right? Like, and so I always thought this was genius.
I always love college curfews.
And we only snuck out a couple times, right?
One bullshit.
We did.
Only a couple times?
We only snuck out three times.
At WVU, the dude snuck out time.
Talking 1AA at the time. And fair. Where the fuck were we going? But, I mean, we only snuck out a couple times.
Amherst, Massachusetts.
Right.
You have to go an hour and a half to have fun.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
That's not true.
Worcester's there. Worcester's not far away. And Worcester can be interesting.
Smith College, bro.
All right. Anyway.
All girls.
We digress.
Ooh, all girls.
We digress.
All girls, and they all had to play sports.
And, oh, my God. Okay.
They were all Sporty Spice. Anyway, so.
Gears have been changed, and entertainment has happened.
We only snuck out a few times, and. But one of their ways to keep us from sneaking out, they would get us pizza. Like, we'd have pizza delivered to our room at like the team dinner was at like 8. Then they would have you would have like 2 pizzas delivered to your room at like 9:30, 10 o'clock, right? And
that's
like,
our unofficial way of checking on you.
Right. It's an unofficial way of checking on you, but at the same time, it's,
you're in college, you're getting pizza.
Right. You're getting pizza.
It's amazing what pizza does.
Right. And there's 2 guys to a room, and we both got our own pizza, butter sauce. Breadsticks, marinara, it was like they knew what they were doing, right? I mean, it's just like you carb up, you eat it, you
better
go like,
curfews, better security,
right. Papa John's. Worked like a charm, right? The only time, like, we, like, the only time it, like, it, it it didn't work was when we were in Richmond, and that was a mess. That, like, even
let's not, you know, to protect the innocent and the not so innocent, let's not go there.
One of our coaches, we were sneaking back in as one of our coaches was sneaking back in. He saw us. We weren't like, we all agreed, like, it was a thing.
Nobody wins.
Like, nobody wins. No one comes out. Right.
And nobody's got to know nothing, as we say in my Italian neighborhood.
We had the ball out, and because it was my position coach. Right, it was three of the running backs and a lineman. Right, so it's not like we can fucking hide because it's me, a 330-pound lineman. You know, fucking Kevin Quinlan, who was, you know,
five names, don't you? Fuck, right. You can't do that.
He's fucking fine. Kevin doesn't care. He's fucking drunk somewhere in Boston right now. And, you know, and then a couple other people. Those
you are the definition of a rat right now.
Fuck you. Come and get me. Come fight me, bitch. And one of the coaches
show has taken great. So that whiskey was 110 proof, and it's working now.
Yeah, we didn't get in trouble. We won that.
We did
not.
Okay, good for you. All right, good for you.
We balled out. Actually, we did get in trouble because Coach Cassano made me fucking run.
Ran your ass off, didn't you?
Which I called him bullshit. Like halfway through, I was just like, "You should be fucking running too."
Wait, the guy that got caught sneaking back with you, the coach back at the same time.
So the coach Cassano, he was like,
"You're throwing names out. You are."
Oh,
right.
Did I say his name? Shit.
You did twice.
Oh, well, you know what? He got fired anyway for a fucked up reason. So he made me run.
Say his name twice? He said his name twice.
So Cass made me run
three.
And like I'm sitting there doing fucking Minuteman reminders, and halfway through, right, he's like, "Oh, you got to fucking do 20 of them." And I'm just like, why the fuck am I the only one?
All right, time out. What is a Minuteman reminder?
It's basically a suicide. Like, it's
40, a 40, 30, 20, 10?
Nah, it's from the goal line to the 10 back. And when you, like, so goal line to the 10, you do, when you get to the 10, you do a burpee, you go back, right? And then it's goal line to the 10, burpee, back, goal line to the 20, burpee, back. And then, like, and that's two.
For those who don't know what a burpee is, a squat thrust. It's a basically get to the ground, do a push-up, do a stand-up, jump up.
Right.
Okay. But it's brutal.
Like, so when you go goal line to the 10, burpee, back. Goal line to the 10, burpee, back. Goal line to the 20, two burpees, back.
Ugh.
And you do all that, and you build up. And it got confusing because the math got hard after a while. I'm at the 40, and I'm like, how many? I'm doing four burpees, and then I'm going back, and then I'm doing three burpees and the whole thing. So I get to, like, the 40, and then I come back, and I called him on his bullshit because, of, you know, he was out.
Right.
And he smelled like booze and whatever. And he's just like, good point. And then he cut it short, and then we went back in.
All right. We should wrap this up, but we got to talk about last week because as Cleveland guys and as fans of Stipe Miocic, he got knocked out by Daniel Cormier.
Yep.
And I showed up at your place and
did great.
A mission of mercy because you had all that crazy shit going on.
Thank you.
You're welcome, brother. It was fun watching it with you. But
dude, you and my buddy's mom, like you explaining her the UFC, right? Like that was. I'm like, what the fuck is happening in my life right now? She asked me. She did, and she's asking you questions. You're explaining to her.
I was explaining, yes.
Right. It was just,
and I'm not a UFC expert by any means.
No, but it was just great. Like her question, her line of questioning. She's like, "This is so interesting."
I saved you from having to deal with that shit.
Oh my god.
So,
well, I mean,
welcome.
Then there's this kid. Okay. Anyway,
we got to watch the fight together. Cormier caught Stipe with a great shot and put him down. Yeah. And Stipe deserves a ton of respect for what he did, right? He won the heavyweight championship about 3 years ago. Defended it three times,
which is more than anyone has defended. Right.
I also want to give Cormier credit. I mean, did you see the interview where he basically predicted, like, I see a flaw in his defense? And he basically predicted how he was going to win the fight. He did. Now, I found one thing really funny, and it was dickish, but it was still funny to me. Cormier shows up at like 247. He normally fought as a light heavyweight at 205. He had to cut weight and was just a chiseled freak. And other than when he fought John Jones, he destroyed everybody. And when he shows up at 247, you could tell he enjoyed the fact that I can fight and not have to cut weight.
Well, not that. I think that realistically,
he's still a bad motherfucker.
He had to get himself to the point where it made sense for him to be fighting Stipe, right?
True. Also true.
I think Stipe's a tall guy.
He was four.
Right, but you know, Stipe walks around, I think, at about 230, 240.
And fights at the same weight, pretty much.
And I think he goes up to, he may be around like 245 when he fights.
But he's not cutting weight.
No, he's not cutting weight.
Most of these guys are cutting.
Right. He's like, that's just natural weight. Cormier is a smaller guy. I mean, he's shorter than Stipe. You know, and so he had to put some weight on just to make it worthwhile, right? I mean, there's no way he was going to be able to hang with Stipe at 200. So I think he did what he had to do to get to a manageable weight. And
but he also didn't have to worry about cutting, so he could power, you know, work on his cardio, work on power, work on whatever, and didn't have to worry about that. Good for him.
He ate freely.
He ate freely. And he won it late in the first round.
Somebody locally said he looked like Hugh Jackson.
That's funny. So what was funny to me was the next day I wake up and the headline was UFC upset the daddest man on the planet, calling him a dad bod. I'm like, that's funny. I'm sorry.
He had to sacrifice his physique for a win, which
I'll take the win over a physique any of the week.
Right. But by the way, if you don't know who Hugh Jackson is, he's the head coach of the Browns.
He's not a slim guy.
Hugh Jackson's not exactly put together well.
Fair. Brother, we got to shut this down.
Yeah.
We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. Thank you for listening. What a roller coaster today was. A lot of fun. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you again to
Port Askeg.
Great whiskeys. Really enjoyed them. All right, brother. We'll finish up
the show with the Wild Turkey Rare Breed.
Yes. Yes, sir.
A Matthew McConaughey special.
Yeah, I forgot about that. All right, at Whiskey
Congress. I've been drinking whiskey a long time.
At Whiskey Congress.
Before whiskey.
And I drive a Lincoln, but not at the same time, because that would be wrong, because I'm Matthew McConaughey.
He might do it at the same time. He's a bad man.
Yeah, we can do that. All right, anyway, good show, brother. Enjoyed it. Later.